premise of the chapter, if you look in verse 17, think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say unto you that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. So those middle verses there sort of, you know, once you get beyond the Beatitudes and the meaning of all those kind of give you the theme of the rest of the chapter. And really, a large part of the whole Sermon on the Mount is tied into that issue. And we saw in the past that, in our study a couple weeks ago, that the law that God had given to Israel, the law of Moses, the scripture says the law and the prophets were till John, that's John the Baptist. Since then, the kingdom of God is preached and all men press into it. So the law of Moses is said to go to John the Baptist. And that's the duration of the law as far as the law and the prophets. Since then, the kingdom of God is preached. So since then, the issue is the establishment of this kingdom. But as you see it here in Matthew chapter 5, because we've gone from the law to the kingdom being proclaimed, doesn't change the fact that the law will still be the principle that operates in the kingdom. What it means, though, is that the law is taken from an outward issue in the flesh and made an inward issue. So the law goes from being something that's performed in the flesh to being something that's internal when you get into the kingdom. That's what he's saying in verse 17 and 18. I haven't come to destroy it, but I've come to fulfillment and to fulfill it. And the fulfillment of it is to write it in your hearts. The fulfillment of it is not to write it on tables of stone, but to write it in the tables of your heart. And he illustrates that in verse 20 by saying, I say unto you that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. So, although the law and the prophets are till John, the only thing that happens in that transition to the presentation of the kingdom is the law gets internalized, gets written in their hearts. He even says in verse 19, whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and teach men so shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. So, you know, far from eliminating the law, he's retaining it, but he's making that internal issue. Exceeding the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. If you turn to Matthew 23, just keep your hand there in Matthew 5, but Matthew 23 gives you the illustration, gives you the meaning of what that illustration in Matthew 5 means. When Jesus Christ says, your righteousness must exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, what does that mean? In what way can your righteousness exceed their righteousness? Well, in Matthew 23, verse 23, when he talks to the scribes and Pharisees, he says, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! Ye pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These ought ye to have done, and not to leave the other undone. Ye blind guides, which strain at a gnat and swallow a camel, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye make clean the outside of the cup and the platter, but within they are full of extortion and excess. Thou blind Pharisee, cleanse first that which is within the cup and platter, that the outside of them may be clean also. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but are within full of dead men's bones. Even so, ye also outwardly appear righteous unto men, but within ye are full of hypocrisy and iniquity. So it's real clear when you look at the righteousness of the Pharisees that it's an outward righteousness. And remember we said that the thing that's changing when you go from the presentation of the law to the presentation of the kingdom is that that law is becoming an internal issue. The scribes and Pharisees have the outward show. They make clean the outside of the cup and the platter. They, in verse 27, they're whited sepulchers. beautiful outward, but within full of dead men's bones. Verse 28, outwardly appear righteous, within full of hypocrisy and iniquity. The verse we started with, verse 23, they pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin. That's the part of the law you can see. I'm paying my tithe. Verse 20, the rest of verse 23, they've omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith, internal issues. So when he says back in Matthew chapter 5, except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, he's saying just that. He's saying, except you have the internal righteousness, you will in no wise enter into the kingdom of heaven. Because the issue in the kingdom is no longer going to be just the outward performance of the law, but the issue in the kingdom is going to be an inward writing of the law on your hearts. Now, when the law is written on your hearts, will you in fact perform it in your flesh? Yeah, you will. You'll still be performing the law. That's why, you know, I'm not come to destroy the law or the prophets. I'm not eliminating the law, but the way in which that law is carried out is different. This is the fulfillment of the law, the writing it in your hearts, and the making you righteous internally. That's what he told the Pharisees. He didn't say, don't do the law, but he said, cleanse first the inside of the cup and the platter, and then the outside will be clean. So the kingdom is focusing on cleanse the inside, then the outside will be clean. Now, beginning in verse 21, he uses five illustrations from the law of that principle. He's going to say, this is what the law said. Here's how that law would apply to the kingdom. Here's what the law said as far as performance in the flesh. Here's what that same law written in your heart would do. And he starts in verse 21, and as I said, there's five. We'll just go through the five tonight. We're not going to get into any, you know, extreme detail in any one of them. The point of this is to try to kind of go through the Sermon on the Mount and get the flow of it rather than get bogged down in each verse. Verse 21, ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you, that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment, and whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. Therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother, and then come to offer the gift. Agree with thine adversary quickly whilst thou art in the way with him, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and thou be cast into prison. Verily I say unto thee, thou shalt by no means come out thence till thou hast paid the uttermost farthing. The bottom line up in verse 21 and 22, in the law it was said, thou shalt not kill. I say to you, if you hate your brother without a cause, you're in danger of judgment. You've committed murder already. Get Exodus chapter 20. We're going to go back and look at each of these. This one's pretty easy to look at. Just one little verse. Exodus chapter 20, one of the Ten Commandments. You've heard it said, thou shalt not kill. That's Exodus chapter 20 and verse 13. And as I said, it's a short verse, exactly what Jesus Christ said, thou shalt not kill. So you've heard it said, don't kill, don't commit murder, don't kill your brother. But I send you, if you hate your brother without a cause, you've committed murder already, you're in danger of judgment. Turn to 1 John chapter 3. And in each one of these, what we want to do is kind of show you that there is a kingdom application of that and the way that that is fulfilled in the coming kingdom. 1 John chapter 3. And let's start reading at verse 7. 1 John 3, verse 7. Little children, let no man deceive you. He that doeth righteousness is righteous, even as he is righteous. That is, even as God or Jesus Christ is righteous. He that committeth sin is of the devil, for the devil sinneth from the beginning. For this purpose the Son of God was manifested, that he might destroy the works of the devil. Whosoever is born of God doth not commit sin, for his seed remaineth in him, and he cannot sin, because he is born of God. In this the children of God are manifest, and the children of the devil. whosoever doeth not righteousness is not of God, neither he that loveth not his brother. Now, those first verses, we look at verse 8 and 9 often when we illustrate that what's going on in these verses. You're talking about people ready to enter into the kingdom, or who will be living in the kingdom, people that have the law of God written, I'll draw a little heart up here. The law of God is written in their heart, and it lives out in their flesh. That's why in verse 9, verse 9, whosoever is born of God doth not commit sin. His seed remaineth in him. He cannot sin because he's born of God. So the admonition there and the instruction about the kingdom is that if you're born of God, you do not commit sin. His seed remaineth in him. He cannot sin because he's born of God. This is one of those verses that if you don't keep it in the context of that kingdom and having the law of God written in your heart, it really is going to mess you up, because there's nobody living in this dispensation of grace that's going to fulfill verse 9. You do not, if you're born of God, you do not commit sin, and you cannot sin because he's born of God. So if you're going to apply that today, that means everybody that sins ever, anytime, is what? You're not born of God. If you're born of God, you cannot sin. You got to put that in the context of the kingdom out here, having the law written in your heart. He goes on to say about that in verse 10, in this the children of God are manifest, and the children of the devil. Whosoever doeth not righteousness is not of God, neither is he that loveth not his brother. For this is the message that you heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. Not as Cain, who was of that wicked one and slew his brother. And wherefore slew he him? Because his own works were evil, and his brother's righteous. Marvel not, my brethren, if the world hates you. We know that we have passed from death unto life, because we love the brethren. He that loveth not his brother abideth in death. Whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer. And ye know that no murderer hath eternal life abiding in him. If you hate your brother, you're a murderer. If you hate your brother, it's because the law of God is not written in your heart. If the law of God is not written in your heart, it means you haven't come by faith, accepted Christ as your Messiah, and you're a part not of that believing remnant in Israel, but a part of the backslidden nation. And the fact that you would hate your brother is evidence of that. And all the stuff we're going to talk about tonight is kind of predicated on the fact that when you get into the kingdom, you've got the whole nation here, Israel, and you've got being carved out of that nation, this remnant of believers. And when he talks about hating your brother, when you say that in the context of Israel, when Jesus Christ said, as much as you've done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto me. Who did he mean when he said, my brethren? The Jews. See, when people read those passages and just sort of take them as, oh, isn't that nice? All men are brothers and we need to love everybody and all. That takes that meaning away. When he says, if you love your brother or if you hate your brother, he's talking about within the context of that nation, there's a separation in process. There's a separation of this remnant being called out. The remnant is seeking to bring more from the nation, more of their brethren into the remnant. But this part of the nation, this unbelieving nation, is going to hate that remnant, is going to hate their brethren. Just like, I mean, if you want to see it historically demonstrated, this nation out here is the scribes and Pharisees. This remnant is the apostles. And what did the scribes and Pharisees do to the apostles in early Acts? Well, they persecuted them. They went after them. They killed them. Paul, you know, hailing men and women, committed them to prison, breathed out threatenings and slaughter, all that. That's the underlying context of a lot of this. When he says, if you hate your brother, well, if you hate your brother, then that means you're a part of this nation out here that hasn't repented. And you've got a hatred for that remnant in the nation that has repented, has turned to Christ, has the law written in their hearts. On the other hand, if you're this remnant, you have a desire to see that nation saved. You have a desire to see that nation have the same faith that you do. So when he talks about loving your brother, hating your brother, and all of that, it's in the context of this division in the nation. Now, you know, people want to take that and make it a broader thing, okay, but that's not the context in which it's written. The context in which it's written is this division that's going on within the nation. Back to Matthew chapter 5. So, it was said in old time under the law, thou shalt not kill. I'm telling you, there's coming an issue out here where you're going to have to make a decision, and if you hate your brother, then you're a part of that nation that has not received Christ as Messiah, and you're hating that remnant. You're hating your brother without a cause. They've done nothing to you. The verse says they hated Jesus Christ without a cause. So when you hate without a cause that remnant, that makes you guilty of murder in the kingdom principles. Down to verse 27, the next issue. Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out, cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. It hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. Excuse me, but I say unto you, that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced, committeth adultery. So the commandment from the law, if you just want to know where it is, it's found in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 14. It comes in the very next verse after thou shalt not kill. It's another short one, thou shalt not commit adultery. That's the commandment in the law. Jesus Christ takes that, as he's doing all of them, makes it an internal issue. If you look on a woman to lust after her in your heart, you've committed adultery with her already. And then he goes through this little thing in verse 29 and 30, which is important to this, because when he talks about lusting after her in your heart, he's talking about, you know, something that your flesh is doing. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eye, the pride of life. So he's talking about those things that will attack, those ways Satan will attack through your flesh. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye. Verse 28, whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. Lust of the eye and lust of the flesh, the pride of life. I want that thing because I deserve it. So, I shouldn't call it that thing, I guess. I want her because I deserve it. So it's easier if you make it impersonal, though. I want that thing because I deserve it. So he's talking there about the flesh and how the flesh can be affected by sin. And then he says in verse 29, if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. If the lust of the eye is a problem, here's how you deal with it. You pluck out your eye. Verse 30, if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off. If the lust of the flesh is a problem, here's how you deal with it. You cut it off. Because it's better to lose an eye or lose an arm than to be cast into hell. And the way he says it in verse 29, it's better than one of thy members should perish, not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. Now, when you think about going to hell, if somebody that's unsaved dies, does their body go to hell? It doesn't. So, you know, the way he phrases that, it's better to lose an eye or lose a hand than to have your whole body be cast into hell. Turn to the book of Mark chapter 9. There's a cross-reference for this in Mark chapter 9. And what it does in understanding what he's saying there is, once again, it puts us in the right time frame out here in the kingdom. Mark chapter 9 and verse number 43. He says sort of the same thing, but he just repeats it several times. Mark chapter 9 and verse number 43. If thy hand offend thee, cut it off. It's better for thee to enter into life maimed than having two hands to go into hell, into the fire that never shall be quenched. where their worm dieth not, and the fire is not quenched. And if thy foot offend thee, cut it off. It's better for thee to enter halt into life than having 2 feet to be cast into hell, into the fire that never shall be quenched, where the worm dieth not, and the fire is not quenched. And if thine eye offend thee, pluck it out. It's better for thee to enter into the kingdom of God with one eye than having 2 eyes to be cast into hell fire, where their worm dieth not, and the fire is not quenched. For every one shall be salted with fire, and every sacrifice shall be salted with salt. The passage here in Mark 9 is talking about, again, the hand offending you, the foot offending you, the eye offending you. Get rid of it. You'll be cast into hell fire, where the worm dieth not, the fire is not quenched. Matthew 5 says your body will be cast into hell. Back to Isaiah chapter 65. What he's describing in Isaiah 65 is, or what he's describing, I'm sorry, in those passages in Matthew and Mark is described a little more fully for us in Isaiah chapter 65, where he talks about, I'm sorry, chapter 66 and verse number 32, or 22, Isaiah 66, 22. For as the new heavens and the new earth, which I will make, shall remain before me, saith the Lord, so shall your seed and your name remain. And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, shall all flesh come to worship before me, saith the Lord, and they shall go forth and look upon the carcasses of the men that have transgressed against me. For their worm shall not die, neither shall their fire be quenched, and they shall be an abhorring unto all flesh. We've studied in the past, so we're not going to go through all the verses tonight, that when Jesus Christ returns to the earth, it says that a fire proceeds forth out of his mouth, and that fire sets on fire the foundations of the mountains. That fire burns from the surface of the earth down in to the heart of the earth, to the belly of hell, and that in the kingdom, the penalty for sin is to be cast alive into the pit. If your right hand offends you, cut it off. It's better for you to go into the kingdom maimed than to have your body cast into hell. There's verses in the Old Testament that talk about Tophet. It's the pile of wood in Tophet is deep. And the breath of the Lord of hosts does ignite it. That's this fire that burns down to the lowest hell. And in the kingdom period, if you look at the last verse there, they shall go forth and look upon the carcasses of the men that have transgressed against me. In the kingdom, the penalty for sin is instant. You get cast out into the lake, cast down into hell, rather. And it is a witness and a testimony to those that look down in there and say, I don't want to get thrown down in there. So when he says in Matthew, see, and that verse, I mean, that's the kind of verse that people will take. And if people really believe the Bible, if your eye offends you, pluck it out. Well, if you really believe the Bible, then what do you have to do if your eye offends you? You have to pluck it out. Just like the verse that says, and we'll get to that in chapter 6, take no thought for the morrow. Well, if you really believe what the Bible says without really dividing it, then take no thought for tomorrow means don't have life insurance, don't have car insurance, don't have fire insurance. You know, none of you sitting here are hoping to use your life insurance today. I hope none of you do. But so why do you have it? In case I need it tomorrow. What? So hopefully, no, none of us will use the life insurance today, but tomorrow you might need it, so that's why you have it. So the verses that people really abuse and end up getting themselves in big trouble over are these verses wrongly applied in the dispensation of grace. This issue is an issue of being cast out into hell, being cast down into the fire where the worm dieth not, the fire is not quenched. People can go out and look upon the carcasses of those that transgressed, and they see them having been cast bodily out into hell. And we've been through this, you know, this This is the word translated there is Gehenna. It's out south of Jerusalem. It's the place where there's going to be the big battle, and he transforms Gehenna from a place of terrible debauchery into a place of his righteous judgment and all of that. That's, you know, we've been through all that in the past. But the point is, that gives you the time frame in which these fit. That fulfillment of the law, pluck out your eye, cut off your hand, all that, he's talking about out here in the kingdom. That's a principle for out there. All right, let's go back to Matthew chapter 5. And go ahead. Sorry. Yes. It's really about, because here's the thing. If you have the law written in your heart, will your right eye offend you? No, it won't. That's right. And that's, I should have made that clear. Even in this context, nobody's actually going to cut off their hand and or pluck out their eye or any of that. Nobody's actually going to do that. But the context of, because if you offend in the kingdom, your body will be cast into hell. That gives you the right time period. But if you believe, like Tammy said, and the law is written in your heart, you know, if that thou shalt not commit adultery is written in your heart, thou shalt not kill is written in your heart, thou shalt not steal is written in your heart, then you're not going to have, it's not going to be an issue. Your right eye will not offend you, your right hand will not offend you, your foot will not offend you, all of that. Yeah, yes. Here's the thing. In the kingdom, remember, like the passage of Matthew 25, you've got the remnant that enters out into the kingdom. And then all those Gentile nations come. And those Gentile nations that he says, come ye blessed of my Father into the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Why? Because I was hungry and you gave me drink, thirsty. I always get that mixed up. Hungry and you gave me food, thirsty and you gave me drink. When did we do that? Well, you've done it under the least of these, my brethren. If those Gentile nations that treated Israel well in the tribulation, they're going to enter out into the kingdom. In the kingdom, the Gentiles did not receive the filling of the Holy Spirit as Israel did. So they're not automatically, supernaturally keeping that law. But they will be living under the law of the kingdom. And if you violate the law of the kingdom, here's where you go. During the kingdom, Israel goes out and evangelizes those nations and teaches those nations the law of God and the kingdom principles. So in that time period is when the Gentiles are being taught, this is the incentive to listen to Israel's instruction and to believe in Israel's Messiah. Does that help? Okay. Yeah, because that's one, and that's even something that I know sometimes when I present it and say it, I don't make clear enough. We think about the kingdom as a time when everybody is perfect and righteous and all that stuff. The kingdom is in, it's in, if you remember, the prophecy back in Daniel says that the stone smites the image at the feet, and then that stone becomes a great mountain that fills the whole earth, but it doesn't start out filling the whole earth. When he establishes his kingdom, he establishes his kingdom in Jerusalem and in Israel. And from there, they go out and evangelize the Gentile nations, those nations that were allowed to come into the kingdom. In Acts chapter 1, go to Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the uttermost part of the earth. They never have done that yet. Those apostles stopped at Jerusalem because Jerusalem wouldn't believe. They never did go out and get the Gentiles. The purpose of the kingdom is for this remnant. In the tribulation, maybe that's, I should write this up here. The tribulation identifies the remnant. So in other words, in the tribulation, this distinction is going to be made between the righteous nation and the fallen nation. At the return of Christ, the fallen nation and all the Gentiles that joined with them and joined with Antichrist get wiped out. The Gentiles that didn't join with Antichrist and that helped the remnant, the nations that helped the remnant. But just because your nation helped the remnant, does that mean automatically you're saved? Doesn't mean that. So the kingdom is for the remnant to evangelize the Gentiles, the remaining nations. So these remaining Gentile nations, they're not just automatically all wonderful. The remnant goes out and evangelizes them and teaches them the law of God. That's the purpose of the kingdom. And in 1,000 years, there'll be new people born into these Gentile nations. I mean, how many generations are going to come in 1,000 years? So in 1,000 years, there'll be more people born. Now, you're starting with a lot less people because the other nations, they get obliterated. But in 1,000 years, you have new generations born. You have, and that's, well, we're in, are we still in Isaiah? I'm not, but are you? Oh, okay. Sorry about that. In Isaiah 65, the chapter right before, if you look at verse 19, I will rejoice in Jerusalem and joy in my people, and the voice of weeping shall be no more heard in her, nor the voice of crying. There shall be no more thence an infant of days, nor an old man that hath not filled his days. The child shall die 100 years old. In other words, when you're 100 years old, you'll still be considered a child in the kingdom. You're not, the curse is lifted off the earth. But the sinner, being 100 years old, shall be accursed. When you sin, you die. It's the righteous reign of Jesus Christ. You're born into the kingdom, into this earth that's been the curse removed, and it becomes then an issue of, do you follow the instruction of the law? Do you heed the message of the nation that's out there evangelizing you? If you do, great. You live on through the kingdom. And in Revelation, remember, when the new Jerusalem comes down, who worships the new Jerusalem? Anybody remember? Let's go to Revelation and get the verse, because I don't want to misquote it. In verse number 21, or chapter 21, I should say, and verse number 21:23. The city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon, to shine in it, for the glory of the Lord did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. And the nations of them which are saved shall walk in the light of it, and the kings of the earth do bring their glory and honor into it. And they shall bring the glory and honor of the, I'm sorry, verse 25, and the gates of it shall not shut at all by day, for there shall be no night there, and they shall bring the glory and honor of the nations into it. So that verse tells you there are going to be nations on the earth that have lived out through that 1,000-year kingdom and go on out into the new earth. And they're the ones, when the new Jerusalem comes down, they're the ones that worship and bring their glory into the new Jerusalem, those Gentile kings of the earth. Those are the ones that are evangelized in the kingdom time period. The tribulation is not for evangelization, it's to identify the remnant. The kingdom is when the remnant then goes out and evangelizes the Gentiles. Okay? Clear as mud. Okay, good. Well, see, then I guess it wasn't okay. Matthew chapter 5. Let's go back there and pick up these other couple. The thing just to remember is, I've already said it a couple times, but maybe I'm not. In the tribulation period, that 70th week, the Jews are not going out and preaching to the Gentiles. That's not the point. The point of the 70th week is that, you know, the Gentiles, that's when the Gentile system reaches its zenith, when they anoint the Antichrist and he's the leader of the Gentile nations, or at least his 10-nation confederation. And that is going to cause the division in the nation and the remnant to be identified. Then after the tribulation period and after the unbelieving nation is destroyed, the righteous nation then can go out and evangelize. That's what God has always intended Israel to do, go out and evangelize the Gentiles. And it's not till the kingdom that they'll actually do that, because that's when the law will get written in their hearts. So it's just understanding the purpose of each of those things in the future, the purpose of the tribulation, purpose of the kingdom. All right, back in Matthew 5, verse number 33, I guess is the next set. Ye have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. Yes, that's very true. But Bonnie informed me the other day that, you know, you're starting to get gray hairs in your sideburns. I said, thank you very much, dear. I appreciate that. Verse 37, but let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatever is more than these cometh of evil. You know, this one's sort of a little more difficult to really get what he's getting at here. Thou shalt not forswear thyself, but thou shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. If you look back to, there's a couple passages we can look at in the law. Exodus chapter 20, first of all, where we've been looking each time. Thou shalt not forswear thyself, but you perform your oaths. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 7. The commandment about thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. That has not so much to do, you know, we use that to say, well, if you use the Lord's name as a curse word, that's using it in vain, and there's a sense in which that's true. But in the law, it really relates to, go to the book of Numbers chapter 30. It relates to the taking of an oath before the Lord, an oath before God, and not doing that in vain and fulfilling the oath that you've taken. Numbers chapter 30, verse 1, Moses spake unto the heads of the tribes concerning the children of Israel, saying, this is the thing which the Lord hath commanded. If a man vow a vow unto the Lord, or swear an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word. He shall do nothing to all that proceedeth out of his mouth. Then he goes through this whole big thing of how you can break a vow. If a father hears his daughter make a vow and he doesn't like it, he can disannul it. And if a husband hears his wife make a vow, he can annul it, and all this kind of stuff. But the bottom line is, he's saying there, if you make a vow, especially if you vow unto the Lord, you don't break that vow. Turn to the book of James chapter 5, and the bottom line is the way he concludes this part, let your yea be yea and your nay, nay, for more than that becometh evil. That is, speak the truth. Well, obviously, if the law is written in your heart, you know, that's going to be the manner of operation. James 5, verse 10. Take my brethren, the prophets, who have spoken in the name of the Lord, for an example of suffering, affliction, and of patience. Behold, we count them happy which endure. Ye have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. But above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by the earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yea be yea and your nay, nay, lest ye fall into condemnation. Again, the issue there is just speak, let your yea be yea and your nay, nay. Don't swear by this, don't swear by that. Because the issue out here in the future, again, is going to be Antichrist sits here on the throne. Is he the true Christ? Is he the true God? Is he the true Messiah for Israel? Or is the one that came 2,000 years ago? I don't really want to get into a whole lot of detail about, go back there to Matthew 5, about all that, because you could, you know, some people take this and use it and say, well, see, you can't, when you go to court, You can't put your hand on the Bible and say, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God? Well, I can't say that. So now every court says, do you swear and or affirm that you will tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, and all that? Again, to take anything out of this passage and apply it, you know, to today, to the dispensation of grace, is misusing it. And when he says, let your yea be yea and your nay, nay, you know, he's saying there, I want you to just, and you notice in verse 34, swear not at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by earth, for it's his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, it's the city of the great king. If you go through the Bible, a lot of times when somebody swears, you know, it's not swear in the sense of curse, but when they swear something, it's when they're getting ready to tell a lie. You know, I swear this is the truth. When somebody says that, you better watch it, because you're probably getting ready to be lied to. And so that's the sense in which he's saying it here, I think. You know, when somebody makes a big issue of saying, I swear on my grandmother's grave or my mother's grave or whatever, well, can't do that, she's still here, but I swear, you know, on something, they're probably getting ready to deceive you, because they're trying to call some other authority to record against them. And be careful of that. Don't get involved with that. So, okay, let's just go on. I want to get down through chapter 5 here tonight. So, all this kingdom stuff, yeah, I don't know. Verse 38. Ye have heard that it's been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you that you resist not evil. Whosoever shall smite you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. If any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. Whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. No, resist not evil. And if you want the law reference to that, it's Exodus chapter 21. Exodus chapter 21 and verse number 22. Exodus 21:22. If men strive and hurt a woman with child so that her fruit depart from her, and yet no mischief follow, he shall be surely punished according as the woman's husband will lay upon him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. And if any mischief follow, then thou shalt give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Whatever happens, you get the same in return. And what Jesus Christ says in the Sermon on the Mount is in verse 39, but I say unto you that you resist not evil. Resist not evil. Isaiah chapter 26. Isaiah chapter 26. The instruction given to Israel, the remnant in Israel for this time. Resist not evil. Do you resist evil today? Yeah, we resist evil today. So why would he say, resist not evil? Well, again, you've got to put it in the context of the tribulation and leading up into that kingdom. What is Israel to do? Verse number 16 of Isaiah 26, Lord, in trouble have they visited thee. They poured out a prayer when thy chastening was upon them, like as a woman with child. So he's talking about the chastening of the Lord. Get down to verse 20. Come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers and shut thy doors about thee. Hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment until the indignation be overpassed. What's to be Israel's response to the reign of Antichrist in the tribulation period? Hide. Just lay low. Don't resist him. Now, they're going to be time. I mean, he's going to pursue them, and if he catches them, they're given instruction on how to answer and all of that. But the fact is, this is not a time for you to resist evil. This is not a time for you to go out there and make your stand against Antichrist. What you do is hide yourself. Verse 21, for behold, the Lord cometh out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. You just lay low, endure to the end, I'm going to deal with it. I'm coming back with a vengeance, and I'm going to punish all this that's going on now. So when he says, you know, an eye for an eye, if the Antichrist does this, you do it back. No, no, no. If the armies of Antichrist destroy your town, you go destroy their town. No. You lay low. You find a place to hide. Revelation talks about you flee into the wilderness where you're nourished for time and time. I'll feed you with that hidden manna. I'll feed you with manna just like I did in the wilderness in the Old Testament. You just get away from the Antichrist. That Antichrist is forcing everyone in your nation to make a decision. Once you've made the decision to become a part of the remnant, you get out. Get out of his way. Remember Matthew chapter 24, if you're on the rooftop, come down and flee. If you're, you know, doing this, flee. If you're doing that, flee. Woe unto them that give suck in those days. You know, the women with children and all that. It's going to be bad because you're not going to be able to flee as well. But I want you to just lay low. So don't do the eye for eye thing that the Old Testament talks about, that the law talks about. Just flee that evil, flee that iniquity, resist it not, I'm coming to take care of it. And that's it. So just lay low. Back to Matthew 5. So that's the admonition entering out into the tribulation and on into the kingdom. Ye have heard, verse 43, that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, pray for them which despitefully use and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven, for he maketh the sun to rise on the evil and the good, sendeth rain upon the just and the unjust. If ye love them which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? And if ye salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? Do not even the publicans so? The idea here is, you know, it's said of them of old time, love your brethren, love your neighbor, hate your enemy. If you go back to the law, go back to the book of Leviticus. Let's just get this one. Leviticus chapter 19. The instruction given to Israel in Leviticus 19, verse number 18. Thou shalt not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I am the Lord. Ye shall keep my statutes. Thou shalt not let thy cattle gender with diverse kind. He just goes on with more laws and commitments, or laws and commandments. But you love your neighbor, and don't avenge your neighbor, and because he's thy people. You've heard what it said of them of old time, love your neighbor, hate your enemy. Well, just as an example, go to Numbers chapter 31. What were they to do to their enemy? Well, we won't read the whole thing, but if you want to read a kind of a gory passage, read Numbers 31 sometime, verse 7. And they warred against the Midianites, as the Lord commanded Moses, and they slew all the males. Verse 9, and the children of Israel took all the women of Midian captives and their little ones, and they took the spoil of their all their cattle and all their flocks and all their goods. And they burnt all their cities wherein they dwelt and all their goodly castles with fire. And they took all the spoil and all the prey, both of men and of beasts. And they brought the captives and the prey and the spoil unto Moses and Eleazar the priest, and unto the congregation of the children of Israel, to the camp of the plains of Moab, which were by Jordan near Jericho. And Moses and Eleazar the priest and all the princes of the congregation went forth to meet them without the camp. And Moses was wroth with the officers of the host, with the captains over thousands and captains over hundreds, which came from the battle. And Moses said unto them, have ye saved all the women alive? Behold, these caused the children of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to commit trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor. And there was a plague among the congregation of the Lord. Now therefore, kill every male among the little ones, and kill every woman that hath known a man by lying with him. But all the women children that have not known a man by lying with him, keep alive for yourselves. Now, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Well, Leviticus 19 says, don't avenge your brother, your neighbor, your own people. But the Midianites, for example, and you can look at other examples of other Gentile nations. Well, when they first went, they killed all the men, brought the women and children captive. Moses and Eleazar say, that's not good enough. You kill all those women, you kill all those young men, those boys, and you save the women, the girls, rather, as slaves for you, to serve you. Love your enemies. Love your neighbors. Hate your enemies. But I tell you, no more. This is sort of like the one we just looked. You're not fighting the battle anymore. You're not. The establishment of this kingdom is not going to be by your might and your power. I will do it. Go to John chapter 18. John chapter 18 and verse 36. John 18, verse 36. This is when Jesus is being tried before Pilate. And he says, Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from hence. Right now, and even when you get out into the tribulation period, my kingdom is not of this world. Now, he says that, but then he modifies that, and he says in the last phrase, but now is my kingdom not from hence. Now it's not. Will it be one day? Sure. But when it's that day, I'll take care of it. You know, my servants, and that would be the angels, they will come and fight on my behalf. And I'll determine when that time is, and the Father will, and I will carry out His wishes, and I will establish my kingdom then. Little flock, you don't fight, you don't resist, you just hide yourself, batten down the hatches, I'll come with a vengeance. And then the last verse, back in Matthew chapter 5, the last verse just says, you know, what they need to do. Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. And of course, that's what the law demanded, perfection. When the law is written on your heart, that gives you that perfection. Be perfect as your Father is. When His law is written in your heart, that's what you'll have. And these five illustrations from the law, putting that into practice in your heart in the context of the tribulation and the kingdom, are what will demonstrate that perfection in that time frame. Got through chapter 5. Really wanted to do that tonight. Any questions or anything about chapter 5? Okay. All right, let's have a word of prayer. Next week we'll get down into chapter 6. There's some other kind of interesting stuff down in chapter 6. We'll get into the Lord's Prayer and all that sort of thing. Let's have a word of prayer now as we're dismissed. Our God and Father, again, we do thank You for Jesus Christ and the opportunity of looking at Your Word and studying it together. And we pray that as we've done so, the things said and done have brought honor and glory to the name of Christ, been edified.